Hello, everyone. My name is Phil Blancato, and I'm CEO and President of Latimer Thalmann Asset Management. Today is already July the 22nd, as we are moving quickly through the summer. I live in New Jersey, and we are squarely in the dog days of summer. It's lots of fun. Warm days and beautiful nights, as well as spending some time down at the beach to relax a bit. I'm headed down there myself in a few days. Well, we continue to watch closely the second wave of the virus and whether or not that's going to have a profound economic impact on the overall U.S. economy. Additionally, what human toll will it continue to take? As of now, we stand with more than 15 million cases globally and 620,000 deaths. The total number of active cases today is about 5.4 million. There have been 9.8 million with an outcome, and as of those, 620,000 deaths globally and 9.1 million people recovered. Interestingly, the fatality rate continues to come down. Where it was most of just about 6%, it's now down to 4%, and I'm going to translate that into a different way to look at that. When you think about fatality, basically what we've come to learn is that this disease is 6 times more likely to create fatality versus the flu. Or put a different way, for every 1,000 people that get it, between 5 to 10 people will pass away. So those are some significant numbers and certainly something to be concerned about. In total, the United States continues to be a bit of a standout from our ability to take care of people. We have about 145,000 deaths as of today, with over 4 million cases total. We actually still have less deaths than all of Europe, who only had 2.7 million cases. So to the credit of the U.S. hospital system, we certainly have done a very good job of taking care of those when they do get sick. However, recently there's been much concern and consternation around the second wave and what it's going to do to the potential outlook of the U.S. economy and, of course, the human impact. As of right now, when we take a look at the second wave, there's certainly a good chance that deaths are going to increase based on it. We're seeing them creep a bit higher. As of July the 21st, the average number of confirmed cases over the past 7 days was 66,800 in the United States. That's actually down. Our average case count over the last 7 days has come down by about, depending on which area of the country you focus on, by about 4,000. The average death from COVID has actually, over the past 7 days, gone up to 789. We were lower than that. In the last few days, we've seen some improvement in places like Florida, Arizona, and Texas. Thankfully, that their new case count is actually ebbing a bit. But remember, as of the peak of mid-April, the average 7-day moving average of deaths in the United States was 22,038, where even though we've come up a bit from our low numbers of around 500, we're back up to 789. We're certainly nowhere near where we were at the peak of the virus when it was really going full steam back in mid-April. So good news that as of now, the medical systems with new therapies and techniques, not to mention new vaccines or new antivirals, are able to keep people from passing away. From the capacity situation, the California hospital system today has 74,000 beds and roughly 11,000 ICU beds. Of those, 2,000 of the ICU beds are occupied by COVID patients. 4,000 are available, roughly 4,100. That's actually an improvement. When we look at California over the last week, there's been quite a bit of an improvement in their overall number of ICU beds. We've seen it actually go up, not quite a bit, but by about 400 beds have become more available. When we look at the new case counts, it's sometimes easy to get lured into some of the narratives around percentages versus people. While California has, over the last week, had a moving average of 9,000 new cases a day versus 8,885, so up a bit over the last week, that's a 1.44% change. Over the last 2 weeks, it's a 20% increase in new cases. So no doubt that California has increased quite a bit in new cases by 20%, going from 7,500 new cases a day to 9,000 in the last 2 weeks alone. But when you look at the number of folks passing away, it's actually down 5%. In fact, 2 weeks ago, there was an average number, a week ago, of 96 people passing away. Now it's down to 91. However, 2 weeks back, the number of people per day passing away was 70, so that's a 30% increase. But for a minute, let's look at that number. So if we have 91 people passing away a day on average in a state of 39 million people, as you can imagine, it's a pretty insignificant number. Now, it's not insignificant for the poor people that are passing away. For certain, there's a human tragedy here. But statistically, it looks like a 30% increase over the last 2 weeks. But in the sheer number of people, considering how many people live in California, somewhat less relevant as compared to when New York City had really a few thousand people passing away in certain days, and certainly hundreds of them. A better situation, thankfully, in California. And good news for places like Arizona, which Arizona, believe it or not, their new case count is down over 20% in the last 2 weeks. So they're improving. They're actually slowing down. Their hospital ICU bed capacity is now back into the high 80s. It was into the 90s. Their death count, although albeit it has spiked a bit, has had some better days as of late. So Arizona went from 40 people dying on average per day to now 83, so a double. But in the last couple of days, marginally better. So hopefully, as deaths lag new cases, that number won't get profoundly worse. And then finally on Florida, which has had a 27% increase in new cases from 8,700 to 11,000 over the last 2 weeks. That's a significant jump. Luckily for them, although their death count has gone from 48 to 81, then actually 48 to 113 in the last 1 week and 2 weeks, representing a 135% increase. Still a very marginal number considering the size of the state. So point being, we're beginning to see the bending of the curve in these places, and that's really, really welcome news. When I look around the globe, the developed markets, including the United States, are beginning to flatten out. We're starting to see the trend break again, which is certainly good news. India, unfortunately, right now is having a bit of an issue. India is spiking pretty significantly, but luckily Brazil seems to have found the top. They're actually ebbing out a little bit as well. So even globally, we're beginning to get our hands around some of this, and it really comes down to how effectively we manage our social distance and wearing a mask. And now that there's a mandate in basically 85% of the areas of the United States, that is actually creating a situation where we're able to decrease the count. In fact, when we look around the United States versus other countries that had susceptible problems, Japan has stricter lockdowns or stricter restrictions on masks, not lockdowns. They were spiking, they've bent the curve. Canada was spiking a bit, they've bent the curve. The only place globally that really is struggling right now, even Brazil has improved and Mexico has improved a bit, is simply India. And it looks like they're beginning to enforce much stricter mask requirements as well. So when you look about the outbreak around the world, luckily enough, we're not seeing the new case count go significantly higher. It's beginning to ebb. And in fact, the death rate continues to stay pretty much about where it's been at its lowest point. We were seeing around 4,000 people die globally on a daily basis. It's ticked up to about 5,000, but in the last few days, it's showing some signs of coming back down again. So recent news is showing some improvement around the country in places, as I mentioned already, Arizona and other places like that. One of the biggest problems we were concerned about from an economic standpoint was how much would the virus increasing in places like the Sun Belt really have an impact on our mobility, how much we're getting out, how much we're spending at restaurants, what we're doing in to be able to actually generate revenue. And interestingly enough, last week I talked a little bit about how there were great concerns about the ability for us to spend money. And we were monitoring this week-over-week spending, and luckily enough, while it's come down a bit from the highs, what we're seeing is foot traffic is now down about 20% year over year. It was down as much as 40%. So we've seen a significant improvement. And luckily so far in the last few days here, specifically the last seven, we're seeing the data begin to ebb, meaning flatten out and not get significantly worse. What we're realizing is that even though states are enacting stricter lockdowns, so far it hasn't impacted consumer spending. Because consumer spending is the most critical part of our economy. And in fact, if we continue to maintain our consumer spending at a robust rate, believe it or not, year over year consumer spending is almost flat. We have come a long way from the bottom of the virus. Now granted, online sales are up 70%, but recently local sales are up around 30%. Still down about 30% from where we were early in the year, but a significant marked improvement. So it's good to see the consumer come in spending some money. Now, much of this has to do with stimulus checks and the ability to spend it. It's certainly not about people getting back to work and spending that money. It's about money that they've had. Our consumer savings rate, how much you save for every dollar, was up at 33 cents. It's now come back down to about 22 cents, which is still some of the highest of your lifetime. So the consumer going into this situation was in great strength. Some of the lowest levels of debt since the 80s, gainfully employed and earning more money. Now, many have lost their job, but at the same token, in that process of losing their job, they have received aid by the federal government, which has led to them being able to spend. In fact, what we're seeing is lower income workers have a 7% increase month over month and year over year in the amount that they're spending. So they're spending their stimulus money. And folks who make over $100,000 a year are actually still down 6%. So depending on the type of income you have, you're tending to spend more. And part of that is pent-up demand. One concern we do have. If restrictions become more significant, for example, if California really clamps down and shuts down all the restaurants and bars, which is really the path that they're on, you could see a reduction in this one, the largest economy in the country, come down by as much as 5% in growth, which would be problematic for the third quarter. We expect the third quarter to rebound. The second quarter GDP in the United States could be as negative as 40%. We're expecting the third quarter to be as high as 20%, maybe even 25%. But if lockdowns become significant, then in fact, we will have a problem where we may just see the growth in the third quarter slow, which would then have a direct impact on the stock market, and companies in the stock market begin to earn money to get out of this. But right now, the data has been pretty good, and it's held the stock market up. We did see one negative item come out of the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index. That measure was basically measures the last 2 weeks of June to the first 2 weeks of July and what consumers think of the overall economy. And it turns out we were up at 79 on a scale of about a 50 to a, really 0 to 130. It's never been 0, never been 130. Usually about the averages, it had gone all the way up to 79, which was reminiscent of where we've been for some of the parts of this recovery. We have, believe it or not, broken 100 at times. But we went back down to 73, and that's because the second wave has had some impact on what consumers think the future of the U.S. economy looks like. We're monitoring credit card spending, and although the consumer is a little less positive, we are seeing year-over-year credit card spending still continue to grind higher, and basically be flat on a year-over-year situation, and online sales be up over 30% using a credit card. But beyond that, we are showing over the last 7 days, we did see a bit of a tick up in credit card spending. So that's signs of a consumer who's not very positive, but they are spending their money on raw goods, things that they need. Less so on restaurants and tourism and things like that, but certainly going and buying the essential items they haven't been able to buy in a while has had a positive impact on the overall U.S. economy. One of the areas of the U.S. economy that I think we forget about is specifically the housing market. The housing market has continued to stay strong. In fact, new home sales came in with some pretty impressive numbers. When we talk about new home sales, just the other day, the data came out, and it looks like we are beginning to build homes again at a fairly impressive rate. So not only is the consumer spending numbers back basically flat year over year, and we're not yet going to restaurants, when it comes to building new homes, there's quite a bit of demand. And in fact, new builder, home builder confidence, the people that build the buildings, is actually, it rose to 72 from 58 the prior month. That's statistically quite a bit of a jump. We're going to build somewhere in the neighborhood of around 1.2 million homes, which we were all the way down to 600 million new homes. So that's a real sign that we're beginning to build. And why building matters is because when people go to work building homes, it's a combination of the lumber, the mortar, the bricks, the nails, but also the people. It's very, very accretive to the U.S. GDP. It adds value to who we are as a country. So in that context, it's a very important number. Separately and aside, we're looking at the overall second quarter earnings cycle is some of the worst we've seen. Not only are we continuing to see high levels of unemployment although they've improved quite a bit, we still have somewhere between 17 million and 20 million people looking for work. On a weekly basis, roughly 1.2 million people applied for jobless benefits last week, which is the 16th week in a row of improvement, but still a terribly high number. So when we have millions of people on the unemployment line, it's great to see housing and sentiment come in okay, but certainly there needs to be a pickup in the unemployment number for us to carry this forward. What this means is, in a situation like that, what the federal government did by creating stimulus to get us to this point worked. And you're seeing it with people spending that money on things that they need, and to a degree, some leisure items as well. But in order to continue the growth go forward, it may require some additional money by the federal government, and it looks like the federal government as of right now is considering a second round of stimulus. It won't be as profound as the first round, but certainly will bear similarities to the first round. So I think that's something that's equally as important and something we would want to consider. It doesn't look like the $600 per week benefits from the federal government will continue, because 83% of the people receiving those benefits actually ended up earning more on the unemployment line than they did while they were gainfully working. However, there will be benefits to help, whether it's tax incentives to get people back to work or other items along the benefit line that will keep people gainfully employed or going back to the place of work through incentives at the employer level. So more to come on stimulus. I think it's going to be a bit of a political football, but we'll learn more about it in the coming weeks. Europe did go ahead and put in another round of stimulus. They're now closing in on $2 trillion of stimulus. Not quite the $3 trillion we have spent, but certainly not too far behind us. Europe has made a commitment to loaning for the first trillion out to businesses that need it and people, and the second trillion will be a combination of grants, loans, and other stimulus items that'll be enacted over the next 6 to 7 years. So when you put it together, the U.S. economy's recent data is actually fairly good. Spending, overall growth in the month of July seems to be holding on, consumers being a bit more excited, people going back to work, lowest mortgage rates in our lifetime, sub 3% for a 30-year mortgage, interest rates still very low, inflation still very low. So all these together have held the stock market up, plus the aid of the federal government and the Federal Reserve coming in and being the buyer of last resort or loaning money to people who really need it. It's how we got to this point. So when you look at us overall, we're in this sort of tug-of-war period. Will the second wave be so significant from a data standpoint and economic standpoint that it will grind back down, which would have a direct impact on the stock market? Or will the second wave be less impactful because we're now learning to wear masks and being smarter about our social distancing, realizing that it's more of the young people getting this, and hopefully this doesn't transfer over to older people who are more susceptible? We're in a bit of an inflection period here. And over the next weeks, we'll learn very quickly whether or not we're able to get this thing under control and be able to continue to open up the society and get the economy going at a higher rate and grind higher through the third and fourth quarter, or will we have to hit the pause button and get ourselves straightened out? As of right now, the stock market is not inexpensive. Stocks are trading at a near all-time high. We are only about 3% off the peak of where we were back in February. It's incredible we've come this far, and yet we're looking at a stock market earnings season with negative 40% potentially be the amount of money companies lose in the second quarter. So the stock market isn't acting like the economy, and for that reason, it certainly gives some reasons for pause when you think about it in the grand scheme of things, that there's no doubt that the stock market's come really far, really fast on optimism, specifically around the vaccine. So while stocks are not inexpensive when you divide their price by how much they earn, we are near back to all-time highs. And squarely the reason why is the latest developments on the vaccine front. And the vaccine front's been pretty exciting. Specifically, Pfizer and BioNTech have come together and said that they will have a vaccine probably by early fall. With distribution in the United States specifically, they have come to an agreement where the United States will give them $1.95 billion. To be able to be 100 million doses that they can give out give out countrywide on an as needed basis. They're going to human trials of over 30,000 people starting this week to find out if in their phase 3 study this thing works as they expect it to work. Additionally, Oxford University, in unison with AstraZeneca, is also rapidly moving down the pace of having a vaccine ready for distribution by year-end as well. So those are the two big announcements this week that both created positive antibody results. Both seem like they're ready for prime time and mass manufacturing. Both have been given money by the federal government to try and speed this along. There is a company out of China called CanSino that also has had great success in a phase 3 trial, and they're also moving along. That gives two for China as well. No new updates from any of the other names like Moderna just yet, but Johnson & Johnson has jumped into the fray and believes they'll have a vaccine for phase 3 trials by September. One nice announcement from Sorrento Therapeutics. This is not a vaccine but an antibody. They're in now phase 2 trials of a drug that brings down inflammation in the lungs. That's important because that'll help us get people out of the hospital. While I think vaccines are wonderful, not everybody's going to want to take them. And to add to that, we need something sooner. Therapeutics will come to market a lot faster rather than later to be able to be prepared for what might come in the fall. So in that sense, there is this idea that having therapeutics come to market like Regeneron or Sorrento could have a big impact. There continues to be good news on the dexamethasone front. That's a steroid that helps bring down inflammation in the lungs like Gilead, remdesivir drug. Both have been working very effectively at keeping people from dying. And that's potentially why the death rate really hasn't spiked a heck of a lot. So far, death rates are lagging based on new cases, but so far things seem to be pretty good from the idea that we're going to be able to manage this or navigate this by not having a lot more people pass away. So the news this week economically is pretty good. You know, we're in a scenario where the data continues to hold up relatively well. There's good progress on the vaccine front. And I think we should be excited that we're in a bit of an inflection point, because some of the data is telling us that, in fact, the overall curve or the second wave may be breaking. And we'll probably have a much better idea of what that's going to look like next week. But luckily enough, if you look at nationwide ICU rates, they've gone up a bit, but still we're not at capacity. We're looking at many of the states continuing to reopen. There are some that are shutting back down, 13 closing down, about 10 that are on pause, and the rest still in some sort of opening phase. But certainly the data tells us that we are in this ebb tide. I keep using that word today. I guess I'm thinking about going on the beach. Forgive me. But certainly the idea that we're able to reopen up the economy in a way that will be effective without being able to harm people is the critical narrative right now. It'd be great if we were like Europe. When you look at Europe and what Europe's done, their ability and commitment to social distancing worked. They haven't had a spike really anywhere in Europe except a bit in Britain. Outside of Great Britain, the idea of wearing a mask, being socially distant, and avoiding super spreader environments indoors where one person can affect many people at once, because that's really how you get this. It's about not wearing a mask in an indoor environment where someone's spreading the virus. And in that sense, I think it's important that we, you know, realize that Europe's done a good job, and we could perhaps follow their progress. Because if the death rate really is just about for every 1,000 people, call it 5 to 10 people are going to pass away, and masks are going to have that much of a profound impact, then we have a solution without actually having to worry about the vaccine. In fact, there was an excellent article in the Wall Street Journal the other day that talked about the ability for masks and how they work. And it turns out that when you wear a mask, the reality is, depending on what type you wear, the spread of the droplets from your cough will go anywhere from 2.5 to 5 inches to 2.5 feet to up to 3 feet. So in other words, if you wear a bandana mask, the virus is only going to spread about 3 feet from your face. If you wear a more complex double-layered cotton mask, it could be just a few inches to a foot or two. But if you wear no mask at all, you can actually spread droplets up to 8 to 12 feet away. Now, understand, the reason why the 6 feet number is so important is you need to inhale a million cells of the virus to get sick. So it's very unlikely that you'd get it from somebody that's, you know, 8 to 10 feet away from you or 12 feet away from you. But without a mask at all, it causes the virus droplets to spread further. While with a mask, it does not. And that's really what it comes down to. If you're interested in reading it, the article is called Evidence Mounts That Masks Help Curb Infections. And that was on Monday, July the 20th. If you like it, contact your financial advisor. We'll find a way to get it to you. But in summary, we have a path to rectifying this. And it's interesting because we're in a bit of a testing phase of our own. As we watch states like Texas and Arizona and Florida and California require masks in just about every indoor location, it may be beginning to have an impact, and maybe, just maybe, we can find a course out of this recent second wave and allow us to open up the economy and continue to grind higher. As always, we try and give you the latest data and try to be brief about it. If you have any questions or concerns, feel free to contact your financial advisor and we'll try and get them answered for you. We do think this is an interesting time. Summer months, volumes on the market are low. The market continues to be euphoric. Lots of positive optimism about the potential for a virus or a vaccine or a therapeutic. While the economic is certainly pretty bad, there are highlights in there like the housing market and retail spending, lots of lowlights like unemployment and earnings. But in summary, we're in this sort of in-between period of time. And over the next few weeks, we're going to get a very good idea of whether or not we can open up schools, which, by the way, are a massive economic engine. Having schools closed, leaving the human impact aside, can be a very profound impact on our ability to generate revenue. Think about how many people go watch a college football game, with the food they eat around it, the TV rights that go with it, and all the other revenue that gets shared amongst it. That's a bad example because we're talking about a sport, but even in your local high school, the janitors being back in school, the teachers are there educating, the students going in, buying lunch every day, the custodians and the cafeteria people, all directly affected by this. So in this period of time here, where we're going to need to get control of the virus to reopen effectively, we're going to monitor closely, try to keep you updated as we go, continue to monitor the success of the vaccine and the therapeutics, and try and give you some answers about where we think the stock market and the bond market are going. The trick right now is be fairly conservative in your portfolio. Don't take on too much risk because there's still plenty of unknowns. How many companies are going to go bankrupt in the United States regardless of stimulus? How much are we going to actually earn in the third quarter? Will we find a vaccine or an antivirus that allow us to effectively open without hurting more people? Will the federal government come into the situation and continue to stimulate? Will we have a contested election coming this fall? And what happens with the election cycle? So as always, there's plenty of things to be worried about. In an environment like this, it pays to be neutral in your portfolio, take a little less risk, maybe hold a little cash, and be prepared for some waves of volatility, because while it's gotten real quiet, there are some concerns as we move forward. I hope wherever you are, you're safe and sound, enjoying some of the sunshine. Maybe you get down to the beach, like I hope to do here in the next few days, and spend some time with your friends and family. Most importantly, wear a mask when you go outside. Be safe, when you're indoors. When you go indoors in an establishment where you don't know everybody, wear a mask. But beyond that, be safe, be sound, and hope to talk to you real soon. Thank you very much, and take care.